Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Glad you could be with us for this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, the founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. And with me today is Eric Johnson, colleague at MRM. And today we're going to talk about the gold plates.
Well, Bill, I'm going to play a little bit of the skeptic today, if you don't mind. Since 2007, you've been challenging the Mormons out on the streets of Manti at the Mormon Miracle Pageant with some replica, you call them replica gold plates, and I just want to know, why do you think that's so important for you to go out there and talk about these plates?
Well, one of the reasons why I think the gold plates is such an important witnessing approach is because if there were no gold plates, there was no Book of Mormon. Most Mormons that I've talked to readily agree with that if he did not have the plates that he claimed to have had, then where did the Book of Mormon come from, except, of course, through the mind of Joseph Smith, which Mormons certainly do not want to admit. Back in 2007, I asked Sandra Tanner if I could have her permission to take her lead replica plates that she keeps on display at the Utah Lighthouse bookstore. And I said, hey, could I actually take those down to Manti with me? I'd like to challenge Mormons on this so they can see just, you know, what these things probably look like and how heavy they actually were. And she gave me permission to do so. Now, I have to admit, I was very, very nervous about this because, as you know, lead is a very soft metal, as is gold. And I would use this in my presentation because if Joseph Smith really did the things that he said he did, then we have to ask ourselves, how did the gold plate survive, being carried like he carried them and getting in scuffles and such? And we'll talk about that a little bit later. But I was very nervous about this. And so I was, it's not that you couldn't lift them. You can, but you can't lift them very far, and you certainly can't replicate the story that Mormons are led to believe regarding the gold plates. So I went down there in 2007 using her lead plates, and then I thought, you know what, there's got to be a better way. This is just too nerve-wracking. So I made my own plates made out of 10-pound barbell weights with a pipe coming up through it and a T-handle, but I only used 10 of them, making my weights just a shy over 100 pounds.
And how much were the lead plates?
The lead plates were 118 pounds. 118. And that's important because when people went to go lift the 118-pound lead plates, many of them couldn't budge it. I mean, some people couldn't budge the
plates. That's a lot of weight.
It is a lot of weight, and it doesn't seem like it would be a lot of weight. But people would go to lift them up, and usually what happens, and I've seen this in the bookstore when I volunteer on Saturdays, people will go to grab the plates underneath their wooden mount, and they will go to lift them up, and they don't move. And usually they'll say, well, are these things bolted down? And I'll say, no, they're not. They're not bolted down. And so then they'll give it another try, and now they'll say, gee, I better put some real back into it. And then they can usually lift the plates a few inches off the pedestal in the bookstore. The same was true down in Manti. Some of them could lift them up pretty high, and I was amazed. Some even the younger ones, even some of the girls, I thought, they were actually lifting them up. But they all admitted to me that they could not carry them for any amount of distance, and they certainly could not run with these plates. And that's the whole point of what I was trying to get across.
But I'm not sure I'm understanding, Bill. Why would somebody have to run with these plates? What's the purpose?
Well, let's back up a little bit, because to tell the whole story, if someone doesn't understand what the plates are about at all, we need to go back up a little bit. And we find in Joseph Smith's history, for instance, that Joseph Smith claimed that he was visited by an angel in 1823. And this angel, who Mormons believe was Moroni, this is the name that the angel gave to Joseph Smith, that he was an angel sent from the presence of God to Joseph Smith, and that his name was Moroni. Moroni allegedly said, according to Joseph Smith, that there was a book deposited written upon gold plates giving an account of the former inhabitants of this continent and the source from whence they sprang. He also said that the fullness of the everlasting gospel was contained in it as delivered by the Savior to the ancient inhabitants. Now, this can be found in the Mormon Standard Works, Joseph Smith's History, section 1, verse 34. So that's really where this whole thing begins. Now, Joseph Smith is not going to be allowed for several years, for 4 years, to go and retrieve the plates. And each time he's not allowed to go get it until a certain appointed time when finally he is allowed to go. Robert D. Hales, who was a Mormon apostle, in October of 2005 gave a conference message in which he said on September 21st, 1823, Joseph Smith was visited by the angel Moroni, who taught him of an ancient record containing the fullness of the everlasting gospel, preparatory to the second coming of the Messiah. Recorded on gold plates, the Book of Mormon gives an account of Christ's ministry in the Western Hemisphere, just as the Bible records his life and ministry in the Holy Land. Joseph received the gold plates 4 years later, and in December of 1827 began to translate the Book of Mormon. Notice here we have a modern-day Mormon apostle saying that the plates were gold. Gold. He doesn't say lead. He doesn't say aluminum. He doesn't say steel. He says the plates were made of gold. When I talk to Mormons in Manti, one of the first questions I'll ask them is, do you believe Joseph Smith had gold plates? They all say yes. Rarely have I ever had a Mormon question that. And I'll ask them, do you believe he had plates made of actual gold? And they'll say yes. Sometimes they'll say yes, of course. Well, why? Well, that's what their leaders tell them. And that's what their books tell them.
But Bill, to be fair, isn't it possible that maybe this was just the appearance of gold?
That's an argument that many Mormons will use because Joseph Smith did say that the plates had the appearance of gold. And they tend to want to latch on to that and make it sound like even though they may have been gold in color, that they weren't necessarily made of the metal gold. I personally think this is a stretch because, for one, gold does have the appearance of gold. And so what does that mean? The angel himself, now this is supposed to be the angel that buried the plates centuries earlier. Now you would think he would know what those plates were made out of if this angel really existed and these plates really existed.
Bill, for those who don't know the Mormon story so well, you've been talking about the angel Moroni. How would he have had the plates earlier?
Well, according to the Book of Mormon, his father, Mormon, gave him these plates, entrusted the plates to Moroni, and it was Moroni who buried the plates in the ground before the Nephite people, according to the Book of Mormon narrative, before the Book of Mormon people, the Nephites, were completely wiped out by the dark-skinned Lamanites.
Where did he bury those?
Well, according to the story, he buried them not too terribly far away from the Smith home. Isn't that Providence? You know, about 3 miles away from where the Smiths were living at the time in upstate New York, near Palmyra, New York, in the western part of the state.
So Moroni, the person from the Book of Mormon, actually buried the plates in the 5th century A.D. and then came back later in the 19th century to present those to Joseph Smith?
And we're supposed to believe that the very person who buried the plates appears later on as an angel to Joseph Smith to tell him where he buried those. Plates, but he does not give Joseph Smith permission to retrieve them for 4 years. In 1827, he's allowed to go and pick them up.
And the Book of Mormon is published when?
The Book of Mormon was published in 1830. So he works on this for an amount of time, and then finally he finds a publisher and such. But before we end this broadcast, I think we need to go back and we need to explain how did Joseph Smith retrieve the plates, because this is where the story really begins. And I know we're not going to be able to finish this today, and we're going to continue it the next day. But according to Lucy Mack Smith, which is Joseph Smith's mother, in History of Joseph Smith by His Mother, page 108, and I might mention this is also in a correlated manual called Church in the Fullness of Times. They also tell this very similar story. This story is told in a lot of different places. So I guess you could say this is the official account as far as the Mormon Church is concerned, because they always return to what Lucy Mack Smith said. And you have to ask the question, where did Lucy Mack Smith get all these details? I have to assume they came from her son. I mean, that's the only plausible explanation. She said that Joseph, on coming to them, took them, speaking of the plates, from their secret place and wrapping them in his linen frock, placed them under his arm and started for home. After proceeding a short distance, he thought it would be more safe to leave the road and go through the woods. Traveling some distance after he left the road, he came to a large windfall, and after he was jumping over a log, a man sprang up from behind it and gave him a heavy blow with a gun. Joseph turned around and knocked him down, then ran at the top of his speed. About half a mile farther, he was attacked again in the same manner as before. He knocked this man down in like manner as the former and ran on again. And before he reached home, he was assaulted the third time. In striking the last one, he dislocated his thumb, which, however, he did not notice until he came within sight of the house, when he threw himself down in the corner of the fence in order to recover his breath. As soon as he was able, he arose and came to the house. He was still altogether speechless from fright and the fatigue of running. This is the story that Mormons are led to believe, and this is why I think the gold plates tactic that I use is so important. I've heard just about every excuse there is as to how Smith could possibly do what is claimed in this small account, but I think all of those rebuttals have serious flaws to them. Now remember, Joseph Smith is doing this as he's carrying these plates under his arm. Now, mind you, when I took Sandra's plates made of lead down there, they weighed 118 pounds, and I did not have anybody who thought that they could carry that weight underneath their arm. One, if you weighed, let's say you weighed 200 pounds, you've got almost 50%, over 50% of your weight holding on to one side of you, and this becomes a problem, and this is what I would like to talk about in our next broadcast, Eric, is How large were those plates? How much did they actually weigh? Because this is actually very important, because if Smith could not physically handle such an incredible weight, then the Mormons have to come up with some kind of answer to that. And I don't think they can come up with a very plausible answer. And so we'll be looking at tomorrow, and I hope that you'll be able to join us as we look at the story of the gold plates. Did Joseph Smith really have gold plates? How large were these alleged plates? How heavy were these plates? We're going to be looking at tomorrow. Hope that you can join us for another edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Have you ever wanted to go to the Holy Land? It's the place where Jesus walked, a place of great significance in our Bibles. In late February of 2013, Mormonism Research Ministry and Utah Lighthouse Ministry are hosting an 11-day trip to Israel. Among other places, we will experience baptism in the Jordan River, walk through Hezekiah's Tunnel, explore Masada, and float in the Dead Sea. During our trip, we plan to spend a day with Israeli resident Joel Kramer, a former Utah pastor and current film producer, who will take us to Cave 1 and Qumran and Jericho as well. In addition, a 7-day pre-extension tour to Turkey is available. Your price includes all transportation, admission fees, meals and taxes, and tips. If you've never been to the Holy Land, or even if you have, join Bill McKeever, Sandra Tanner, and several local Utah pastors for the trip of a lifetime. It all begins February 19th, 2013. Visit theapologeticstudybibletour.com for more information, or call 602-788-8864.